meeting to order, and let's stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
Flag is, oh, you did.
Right here. I pledge
allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call, please.
Conklin?
Here.
Grinch?
Here.
Needhammer?
Here.
Page?
Here.
Salomon?
Here.
Quorum present.
Thank you. Well, thank you, Joe, for making the trip up to... you got a lot of snow in Grand Rapids,
yeah? Oh, yeah. Yeah, probably 2 or 3 inches.
Yeah.
Oh. That's a lot. Jeez. For us, it is.
Sure. Well, we appreciate you coming. Mike, you want to...
Well, again...
Make your introductions?
You have before you a copy of the audit that we received. This is for the last fiscal year, which ended on April 30th of this year. And as has been our practice for the last couple of years, before Joe does the formal presentation at tonight's City Commission meeting to the audit, we're taking some time so the Commission can ask, so Joe can present, and then the City Commission can ask any questions that they have in a little bit more depth with regards to process. And I think that's probably all the introduction I need to do at this point. You've seen the document, and I'll let Joe lead us through it, and whatever questions that the Commission has, or discussion we need to have, we can have after that.
Sure. And feel free to ask questions as I flip through it. I've highlighted stuff that I think is relevant, but certainly if there are any questions, I'm more than happy to field them throughout the process. As usual, it was a pleasure working with the city staff. Everybody did a wonderful job providing the information needed to perform the audit engagement. It was definitely a clean process. You'll see that throughout the audit, financial positions improving and clean opinions, clean report on internal control. So all around, just a very, very good, thorough audit process. I'm going to start at the very beginning, even before I get to the opinion letter, which is the most important. There are a couple of areas that I do want to point out. First, starting on page 2, this is the introductory letter. City spends a lot of time, Mike puts this together primarily each year, and this is just one example of the city going above and beyond in terms of putting together this comprehensive annual financial report. So it's not just a financial statement audit report. We've got an introductory letter, then the financial statement audit report, and then some statistical information. And all of this gets bundled together and sent to the Government Finance Officers Association for the Certificate of Excellence in Financial Reporting, the award. This will be the third consecutive year that the city has earned that award. And here on page 2, we start with the introductory letter. I won't go through that letter necessarily, but I did at least want to point it out. There's a lot of good information. Just talking about the significant accomplishments during the past year, how these financial statements are put together, why they're put together, accolades to the various departments who contributed to putting that together. I think it's a nice letter. It's very good for the community to take a look at that. There's just useful information. It provides a lot of narrative as to what's going on financially at the city. On page 7, we actually get a look at the award, the Certificate of Achievement for Excellence in Financial Reporting. And I think I gave the same statistics last year because the GFOA hasn't updated their numbers in the past 12 months. But of the 1,765 local units of government in Michigan who are eligible to participate in this program, 65 received this award. It's not something that very many communities participate in because there's a lot of additional work that goes into it. So basically 3.7%, less than 4% of the local units of government go the extra mile to earn this award. And it certainly means something. I think it definitely sets the city apart. It shows the residents that you guys take pride in the financial reporting. You're going above and beyond what the other municipalities are doing in terms of financial reporting. So definitely kudos to the staff in putting all of this together. Now we get to the actual financial statement audit. And if you turn to page 12, a couple of paragraphs I wanted to point out here. First is the opinion paragraph, and I mentioned it was a clean audit process, and accordingly we are rendering a clean opinion on the financial statements. And what that means is, in our opinion, the financial statements present fairly, in all material respects, the financial position of the city as of April 30, 2019. So we work with the county to verify property taxes. We work with the state of Michigan for state aid. We work with the financial institutions to confirm cash, long-term bonds payable. We're working with all of these different organizations to make sure that everything that's being provided to us is accurate, it's timely, it's free of material misstatements. And if we get to the point where we're comfortable enough to render a clean opinion, we write this paragraph. I know Mike questioned because when he puts the letter together, it's called an unmodified opinion. And the unmodified term doesn't sound flattering. It sounds dated. Nowhere in this paragraph do you even see the term unmodified, but this is technically an unmodified opinion. It is the highest level of an opinion that we can provide on financial statements. And it should always be the city's goal to get the clean opinion, but it takes some effort to get to that point. We have had larger organizations that have had either adverse or qualified opinion, so it certainly does mean something to achieve it. The next paragraph down, the past 2 years I've been talking about the new retiree healthcare reporting standards that are coming down the pipeline, and it's going to have an impact on the city's finances. And now this is the first year that the city has been required to implement GASB, Governmental Accounting Standard Board Statement Number 75. And this paragraph is just pointing out to the readers that there is a substantial change in the appearance of the statement of net position. The basic financial statements are now reflecting the retiree healthcare liability, and we're pointing them to footnote number 13, where it describes the nature of the financial impact of implementing that standard. So this emphasis of matter paragraph probably comes along every 5 or 10 years. The last time that the city had this paragraph in its just underneath the opinion was when we implemented the retiree or the pension reporting standard. So not too frequently do we see it. And basically, we're just trying to tell the readers that there's a substantial change, and we want to make sure they're aware of it.
So if we looked at note 13, what would that tell us? Where would we find note 13?
Note 13 is page 66. And here we talk about the city implementing statement number 75. And we did change the beginning net position. We decreased it by $29,316. So it actually ended up having a fairly nominal effect on the city. It was only $29,316. Many of our local units who have retiree home care are north of $1 million. And it was having a significant effect. You guys have closed the plan as of, I believe, January 2014, so the new hires aren't participating. So the size of the impact, the consequence was far less to Boyne City than many other local units of government. So so here we are at least pointing out that there was a $29,316 addition to the liabilities that we added to the statement of net position. And it did change. If you looked at the beginning net position on this year's financial statement audit report and compared it to the ending net position on last year's financial statement audit report, it's going to be off by about $30,000, and this is why.
So as he's talking about a substantial number, I think, you know, or a substantial difference in how the thing is being reported, the process might be different, but the impact to us because of the actions we've taken quite some time ago are relatively minor. So I just want to make sure that we're aware of that when we're talking about that. Both with regards to this portion of our benefits program and also with regards to our retirement package itself, with regards to how the level of funding that's at as well, too.
One of the things that I will point out is in the statistical section, we have the city presents 10 years worth of comparative data. And you can see what happened when the city implemented the new pension reporting standards back in 2016. There was a dip in the net position, so the unrestricted net position went down, and actually was a deficit for, I believe, 2 years. The city's already recovered from that and now has a positive net position. So you can see the city has really weathered those storms. What's impacting a lot of communities with regard to the pension reporting standard and the retiree health care reporting standards, that's put a lot of people into a deficit, unrestricted net position. In fact, most of my presentations lately have been to school boards, and I'm showing them the impact of both of those standards. And they have tens of millions of dollars. It almost looks hopeless when you look at schools because, in fact, the one that I presented last night, they have a $30 million deficit, unrestricted net position. And they had a good year. Their net position increased by $300,000 during the year. But it's like, okay, well, another 20 years, we might have break-even net position. You guys have already weathered that storm. So certainly a lot of prudent financial management over the past several years have put the city in a very good standing. So if we go all the way back to page 13, I will point out really quickly, I'm certainly going more in depth here than I will in the full commission meeting. But here, I do want to point out the fact that in addition to looking at the numbers, we also are providing the city with a yellow book audit. So government auditing standards is synonymous with yellow book. And what that means is when we begin the process of performing an audit engagement, we have to ask ourselves as auditors, what can go wrong here with regard to compliance? So not only do we care about the numbers, we want to make sure that we can prove the numbers, but we want to ask ourselves, what if the city isn't spending the dollars correctly in major and local streets? Or what if there's a certain compliance requirement that Michigan Department of Transportation has set and established with those Act 51 dollars? What if the city's not following all those compliance requirements, dotting all the I's, crossing all the T's? Is it possible that MDOT could say, well, we're going to disallow these expenses and you need to repay MDOT? Or, if there's other grants, certainly there were other grants received, significant grants received during the year by the city. We have to ask ourselves, what can go wrong with these grants? What types of compliance requirements do we need to be aware of as auditors just to make sure that the city is spending all of their dollars correctly? So not only did we look at the numbers, but we did look at several compliance requirements just to make sure that controls are in place over compliance so that the city can have reasonable assurance that those dollars are being expended correctly. And in the back end of the report, we actually render a report on internal control in accordance with government auditing standards, and that came back clean as well. So we didn't see anything where we felt that there were controls not suitably designed to ensure that those compliance requirements are being achieved. So I did want to at least point that out. It is maybe half of our cities receive yellow book audits, the other half don't. You guys do are required to have a yellow book audit just because you have certain bonds that require us to go the extra mile and take a closer look at those compliance requirements.
So before you get too far, could we go back about the Housing Commission?
Sure.
On page 11?
Sure.
So we talked about this before. Do you think it's a good idea that the Housing Commission and the city use different auditors?
I think so. I would say in most cases that the Housing Commission audits are generally handled by maybe half a dozen firms throughout the state of Michigan. It's a kind of a niche audit. They have to work closely with housing and urban development. There are all kinds of additional hoops that need to be jumped through in order to be able to perform those audits. And I would venture to guess that 80%+ of those audits are performed by five or fewer firms in the state of Michigan. So generally speaking, cities and their related housing commissions are normally handled by two separate auditing firms. To be honest, if the Housing Commission came to us and said, hey, can you guys do our audit, we would respectfully decline to do that just because it is very nuanced. Housing and urban development, it's not an easy federal agency to work with. for that reason, you know, we've chosen as a firm to stay away from that type of an engagement. So we don't audit any housing commissions. So any of, in most of our city, I would say maybe half of our cities do have housing commissions that are brought into the city as a discreetly presented component unit. And we're typically independent of that, or we are independent of that audit process at the housing commission level.
Have you run into any situations, hopefully not, where the housing commission, issues with the housing commission, maybe it was a modified opinion or maybe some misuse of funds spilled over into affecting the audit or the financial position of the city?
It could have an impact, I suppose. I don't know that we haven't necessarily seen that come up where we felt that we needed to include it on the parent or the primary government's financial statements. Generally speaking, they have their own governing bodies. They have their own accounting departments, and they really, governmental accounting standard board statement number 14 unfortunately requires us to include it. When we look at the state statutes that these housing commissions are formed underneath, they have to be brought into to the cities, or at least the primary governments, some villages, and actually some counties include housing commissions on their audit reports. But for all intents and purposes, they're independent of the city. It's not like, did you comment on that?
Yeah, when you were done.
Okay. It's not like, other than reviewing and monitoring the financial statements, I know some housing commissions will provide monthly financial statements back to the city. I believe the annual budget in most cases gets approved by the primary government. But those dollars are really kind of handled at the housing commission level. So I don't know that I've seen anything float up in impact, but I suppose if there was a large embezzlement, then ultimately that liability could be passed on to the primary government. I forget the exact terminology. The city does retain the right to bring in-house the housing commission, the ability to provide housing services. It is something that it's a privilege that's bestowed upon the housing commission by the city, and the city certainly has the ability to bring it back in-house if they ever wanted to. I don't know that I've ever seen that actually happen, though. Normally once the housing commission is formed, it becomes a self-governing body at that point in time.
The feds will play it both ways, and we've seen that before. When they had problems with our previous executive director at the Housing Commission, they brought the mayor at that time, Chuck Vonder, and I to basically in to say, okay, city, you need to fix that problem. Even though on a day-to-day basis, we don't have any apparent legal authority to do that. And the feds and the state have made it very clear that they don't want us interfering with the day-to-day operations of the Housing Commission at all. Ron at one point was on the Housing Commission board, and they said, no, you can't have anybody that's on your city commissioner or staff or anything to deal with it. So when things are going well up at the Housing Commission, the feds and the state don't want us to have any impact on what their day-to-day operations are. Mm-hmm. If things go wrong, we'll be the first ones, like they have before, to come in and they'll say, okay, we told you to keep away from that, but we now want you to clean up that mess if there's one that's up there. So, and we had that when Sheila was our executive director up there.
I kind of wonder, looking back at that too, what we could have done to, to prevent the $130,000 shortfall, happening. It built up in increments over time, and is there anything that we could have?
No, they wouldn't allow us to. They wouldn't allow us to do anything about it. They've given me clear, direct, hands off. So it's interesting. So it's a catch 22.
Asking the questions at the meetings, the housing commission meetings, what are we going to catch this up? And it just we weren't getting anywhere as far as an answer.
But nonetheless, it doesn't appear that we're at great risk of being dragged down in our position, financial position, by virtue of something that happens in the, or there aren't experiences in Michigan where that's happened.
Mm-hmm.
So that's good to hear.
Sure.
But how do you not catch an embezzlement? If you're doing an audit, how do you not catch an embezzlement like that?
An embezzlement like what?
Well, Brian mentioned $130,000 or something.
There wasn't
an embezzlement. They, we did their payroll, and we billed them. Their payroll infringes, and we billed them every month, and they weren't paying it. And so
they just spent more than they had. There wasn't an embezzlement or anything like that. I don't think there was anything illegal. It just was kind of sloppy management.
And it just snowballed, and they...
And they weren't addressing, you know, kind of the stuff that we've been addressing, which is, you know, trying to get ahead of the financial need. They were just financially sinking. And as Cindy mentioned, there was a time, 15, 20 years ago, when we were real close, like she said, we were doing their payroll, a lot of their insurances and that type of stuff, and they've gradually moved on their own. They used to use our tax-exempt number, and they have their own now.
They're
at this
on their
point.
Own. They've been on their own for several years.
So over the period of time, we've tried to create more distance between us, except when the feds tell us thou shalt not. Anything else on the Housing Commission? I mean, everything I'm hearing right now is that they're in very good shape.
Help yourself. It's there before it gets cold, so please help yourselves. I mean, there was kind of a eat and as we talk kind of thing.
So the most important topic, we can eat.
You can eat anytime, yes. Please help yourself.
And that, I think, unmodified opinion.
Right. Because I'm just going to go get some on my own.
Let the mayor leave.
You can let the mayor leave?
No.
Go to last.
Not at all.
Okay, so where are you taking us, Joe?
So, page 15, next, we get into the management discussion and analysis section of the audit report. And here, if you wanted to focus on 10 pages to get a quick understanding of how things are progressing at the city. This would probably be the best way to get a real quick snapshot. There's financial highlights, 2-year comparative data, and some narrative explaining significant changes in over the past couple of years. So starting on 15, I'll go through those financial highlights. The first one shows that assets and deferred outflows exceeded liabilities and deferred inflows. In other words, in the corporate world, we would call this equity. Was $29.9 million. But that includes everything for the city, infrastructure, retiree health care, pension liability. It's a very long-term outlook. A lot of it is illiquid. Obviously, you know, the city can't spend in streets, but those are included in the overall net position, buildings, infrastructure. All of that is added together in that net position. Second bullet point now gets us to fund balance. So when we look at fund balance, now we're excluding water fund, sewer fund. We're looking just at the governmental funds of the city as of April 30, 2019. We're looking at the immediate resources compared to the immediate liabilities. And there we have $3.3 million of fund balance. And we think of that as, when my wife and I are trying to figure out how are we doing financially, we look at our checkbook, and I would think of this as being kind of the same thing, fund balance. It's not quite that simple, but very liquid resources compared to liquid, very short-term liabilities. So we're excluding bonds, we're excluding pension liability. We don't have any infrastructure included in that number. And that's a decrease of $324,811. So, in other words, cash out exceeded cash in by $325,000 during the year. It doesn't sound good. Over time, we'd like to see fund balances increasing, but there was very much an intended spend down during the year. So there was capital outlay expenditures. There was obviously the lakefront property. There was a $2.25 million grant that was received, but it was a $3 million expenditure. There was a draw on fund balance to be able to make that happen. Altogether, a $325,000 decrease in fund balance, given the fact that the city had $4 million of capital improvement expenditures during the year. It was actually a very good year in terms of financial performance. And then the third bullet point, when we look at the unassigned fund balance, so if we back off, major streets and local streets, we back off the funds that are restricted, and we look at just the unassigned fund balance for the city, which is the amount that's left to cover day-to-day operating costs, wages, utilities, supplies. There's $2,030,706 of unassigned fund balance. If you take that and divide it by the annual general fund expenditures and transfers out, you're at 31.7% funded as of April 30, 2019. The Government Finance Officers Association recommends having 17% for 2 months set aside in reserves. 32% is certainly north of that benchmark. And even with the intentional spend down in the general fund, you're still at a very stable financial condition at April 30, 2019.
Cindy, what's our standard? Is it 25?
25.
25% is our internal policy.
Mm-hmm. And is that 31.7% now at the end of the year what we kind of anticipated when we talked about fund balance during the budget process?
Yes.
No big surprises.
No. I mean, as Cindy and I are going through the budgetary processes, I mean, the last couple of years, as we spent some of that fund balance down on some of our major acquisitions and things, we've been looking to make sure that we're still keeping ourselves above the city commission's goal. And with the purchase of the open space property, that was, we had to go through a couple different scenarios to make sure that we weren't going below that.
Mike, was there a couple $100,000 or something that was in question about that?
There's not in question. It's money that has not been returned by the state yet, or actually, I don't know if it's been returned, or it just wasn't the final payment that they made. They haven't done their final audit on that.
So there's a likelihood it would increase by a couple $100,000?
Yes. I don't know when that's going to take place. Mm-hmm. I know Ron's asked that question in the past, and I keep it in the back of my mind that I'm assuming that we'll get that back, or get that payment, I should say.
$227,000.
I'm trying to remember if it was 227. I don't remember the exact number, but it sounds like you do.
I think it is.
Yeah. I wouldn't dispute it. It's in that ballpark. I knew it was over 200.
But basically, it won't bump 2018. It'll bump 2019.
Well, it depends on when it's received.
Hopefully it'll bump 2020, but...
You're right, you are.
They still have to go through their audit process and make sure everything was completed.
So on page 18, we get a look at the comparative assets and liabilities for the last 2 years of the city. And this is across all funds. And this is on the long-term basis of accounting. And top row shows cash and investments were up by about $200,000. It's always nice to see cash and investments trending up over time. And if you look about three quarters of the way down, you'll see the net OPEB liability. And this is the first year that we called it a net OPEB liability. And you can see that at April 30, 2018, the total primary government, the last column, was $126,852. And it increased slightly up to $134,500. Ultimately, that number is going to become $0 after all the payments are paid out. And four rows down from that, we see the net pension liability. It was $2,015,321 at April 30, 2018, and it decreased to $1,956,705. You'll see the makeup of that. So the city has retirement pension assets set aside in with MERS. And we expect them to earn 8% rate of return, and some people dispute that. But ultimately, the actuaries are assuming that those assets are going to earn 8% over the course of time. During 2018, in the fourth quarter specifically, the stock market went backwards significantly. And actually, there was about a 2% decrease on market assets in 2018. And I know we're talking about April 30, 2019. We have a little bit of a gap with regard to the timing. So the planned year ends December 31st. The city's fiscal year ends April 30. So we have a four-month gap. But we're using 2018 market performance to value the net pension liability at April 30, 2019. Even though the market went backwards, the total pension liability actually decreased. And I think you guys are the only local unit that we work with that saw that. And the reason is that there was a change in assumptions. So the actuaries take a look, and they're looking at who actually retired compared to when they estimated the retired dates. What are the changes in the demographics? What are the changes with the census compared to from 1 year to the next? And based on actual experience versus what they assumed the prior year, they keep refreshing their actuarial assumptions. And because of that, there was actually a $700,000 decrease in the net pension liability. So even though the market performance was negative, you guys actually saw a decrease in your net pension liability. And I can say with almost 100% certainty, I don't think we had any other clients that had a decrease in their net pension liability. So that was kind of nice to be able to see a decrease in that net pension liability. And we'll see a schedule that details the increases and decreases. And then the unrestricted net position, two rows up from the bottom, in the 2018 column, you can see it was $4,684,534. And that number increased to $5,688,792. So we'd like to see the unrestricted net position increasing over time. And not only did it increase, it increased by just over $1 million during 2019. So a very encouraging sign to see that trending upward like that. If you turn one more page to page 19, we get a look at comparative revenues and expenses for the last 2 years of the city. And a couple items are worth pointing out here. First, capital grant contributions. In 2019, April 30, 2019, they were $2.7 million compared to zero in 2018. That's just kind of the nature of capital grants. Some years the city gets them, other years they don't. There were three capital grants in particular that the city received in 2019, first being the lakefront property. There was a $2.25 million grant that was received from the DNR, and another $250,000 approximately for the water waste grant for the marina, and another $150,000 approximately for from FEMA for fire equipment grant that was received during the year. So the sum of those three get us to the $2.74 million. So that certainly helps, because all of that $2.74 million, there really was no expense that was recognized. We took all that $2.7 million and we recognized it as an asset. The land's never going to be depreciated. The rest of it will be depreciated over its useful life, but that did certainly have a significant impact on the net position. So if you look three rows up in the bottom, the total primary government, so the second to last column for 2019, you can see there was a $4,339,586 increase in net position. So I would think of that as being net income revenues exceeded expenses. So very strong year. But a lot of that was certainly aided by the $2.7 million of capital grants that the city received. And a couple other things worth pointing out, the operating grants and contributions in the business type activities, the very middle column, 2019 was $365,333 in 2019, two rows down from the bottom, or from the top, I'm sorry. That compares to about $89,990 in 2018. That's the SAW grant that the city received during 2019. It's simply, there were more draws, more reimbursements in 2019 compared to 2018.
Joe, I'm sorry, I missed. What line are you on?
The second row down from the bottom, and the operating grants and contributions in the business type activities. So the 2019 column.
Okay. Okay.
It's a non-recurring grant. It was basically about $270,000 more than it was in the prior year. So that too was kind of an outlier in terms of increased revenues this year compared to the prior year. But property taxes were stable. They were actually down a little bit, but that had to do with the local community stabilization authority. The reimbursement from the LCSA was a little bit less in 2019 compared to 2018, so that was why we saw a decrease in property taxes, but tax revenues were up the millage rates were about the same. It just was, we don't know. We don't have a crystal ball. We don't know what LCSA is going to distribute on an annual basis. It just was larger in 2018 than it was in 2019. The state revenue sharing was up a little bit. We're seeing that across all of our local units. There's more sales taxes being redistributed with local units, so you did see about a $15,000 increase in state revenue sharing during 2019 compared to 2018. And then altogether, total expenses actually increased from $7.9 million in 2018 in the total primary government, four rows up from the bottom, to $7.9 million up to $8.4 million in 2019. That doesn't mean that the city spent another half $1 million year over year. What it does mean is that the market, the change in the market performance did actually have an impact on pension expense and for the city. And we'll see that, in fact, it's actually explained in the third paragraph down. So deferred outflows and inflows related to the pension increased by $452,000 and $150,000. A lot of that has to do with market conditions impacting total net pension liability in that position. So not anything that the city is necessarily doing is driving those expenses up. Some of those expenses the city doesn't have any control over. It's merely based on market performance, and they get reflected and picked up on the financial statements. When we look at the fund financial statements, that is what the city does have direct control over, and we can see very much normalized spending during the year.
Question on the third paragraph there.
Sure.
City's net position liability decreased by $58,616.
Mm-hmm.
And is that the dollar amount that we put in?
Partly. So that has an impact on the net pension liability. Market performance has an impact on it. Change in assumptions. And we'll see, I will get to a schedule that shows all the various increases and decreases in the net pension liability. But the contribution that the city makes certainly does increase net pension liability. That is one of the elements that changes it.
The second question, two-part question, is that that's our total outstanding liability at this time for pension liability.
The unpaid portion.
But $58,000 doesn't seem adequate enough to...
So that isn't the total. That isn't the total. Our pension liability decreased by $58,000,
right,
to $1.9 million.
Right.
That's our pension liability.
Right.
So when we take the total liability according to the actuaries and we back off all the assets that have been set aside with MERS to cover that liability, it's about $1.96 million is the net pension liability. That number over the course of the next 20 years will become zero. So the city's going to keep on putting those each year, they're going to keep on meeting the annual required contribution that the actuary establishes. It's going to go into the MERS trust and it will eventually be fully funded. And I would agree that going from $2 million down to $1.96 doesn't seem like very much traction in 1 year. But given that there was a net investment loss in 2018, that's really what kind of stalled.
I look at that and it seems to me that is an adequate amount to cover the long-term issue.
$1.9 million,
right? The $1.9 million, right.
Well, next year, so far this year, the market is better. We might see a bigger decrease than we did this year because hopefully better market performance.
Mm. So if we can skip ahead to that schedule real quick, just so we can see what the impact of the net investment loss was. If you go all the way to page 70, This was the fourth year that the city has been reporting the pension liability, net pension liability. So we have 4 years of comparative data. Ultimately, we have 10 years here. And in 2018, if you look at the total pension liability, it was the actuaries believe that $8.6 million is going to be paid in order to fully fund any active employees, as well as the retirees, over the course of the next 20, 30, 40, 50 years, until everybody who was eligible to receive benefits is fully paid out. And then to cover that $8.6 million, the plan fiduciary net position, the assets equal $6,633,714. So that's how much the city has set aside to cover that. And you can see the plan fiduciary net position. You can see the contributions from the city on the top row. So during 2018, the city paid in $391,102. So that decreased the net pension liability. In addition to that, the employees paid another $32,254 to further reduce that net pension liability. And then here's where we run into an issue. You can see that the net investment income, or loss, was $275,021. We expect that the city is going to earn somewhere between 7 and 8% on its assets.
Of $6 million?
Yep. At the beginning of the year, it was $7.1 million. Rough math says we should have earned $575,000 on the assets. Well, we actually lost $275,000. That's why we didn't really put much of a dent in the net pension liability. If we compare that 2018 to how the city did in 2017, city earned $852,428 in 2017 on its pension assets. In 2016, the city earned $683,914. And then in 2015, there was a net loss of $95,000. See, some years it's up, some years it's down. In a good year, it really helps the net pension liability. In a bad year, it kind of goes backwards and really compounds, because not only did we not have a gain, we had a loss. So that's the biggest factor in terms of why the city only saw the $65,000 decrease during the year. So it can be a little bit frustrating. I can understand that, because the city paid $391,000 into MERS, but there's only $60,000 decrease in that net pension liability. That's the underlying reason why there wasn't much ground gained on that net pension liability. But when things normalize, in fact, you know, the prior year, the change was in 2016, the net pension liability was $2.4 million. In 2017, it dropped all the way down to $2 million. So you can see the impact of market performance on the net pension liability.
So Joe, the benefit payments, including refunds, that's what is being paid to the retired employees, their pension?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Was there an additional employee that went on the plan last year, or is it just because there's a difference?
I'd have to look at the actual census and compare 1 year to the next to see what it is. Maybe
it looks like it's been going up $40,000 or $50,000 a year.
Yes.
So with the market fluctuating so much like that, why have they put such pressure on local governments to continue funding like that when it's such a, you know?
Well, the risk is, and I just looked at the number, over the past 10 years, the MERS retirement, return on retirement assets has been just a little bit over 8%. So, in theory, a well-funded pension plan is going to be primarily, the investment earnings are going to cover the cost of those pension benefits. So we want the assets to be able to cover those payments. We want the return on investment to be able to cover that. The problem that some local units are running into is that they're 40% funded. Well, the only way that they can meet those pension obligations is they're just not getting enough return on those retirement assets to be able to cover anywhere near what they need to fund the provision of those benefits. Mm-hmm. So they have to cough it up out of their general fund. What they're trying to do, and that's why Treasury wants everybody to get at least north of 60%, and they're going to keep on bumping that up, 65, 70, 75, 80. They want everybody to be fully funded, because a fully funded pension plan, it puts very little burden on the general fund, and the rest of those pension earnings are going to cover everything else that's being paid. So that's the ultimate goal. We want those assets to earn a reasonable rate of return, so that there's less burden on the general fund to be able to cover those future benefits. So that's why there's a little bit more, or a lot more urgency now than there really has been in decades past to get it fully funded. And the same thing's going to happen with OPEB. Any local units that have retiree health care plans that are still open, Treasury is now putting pressure on them to fund the retiree health care plans. You guys are exempt from it. So there's the Public Act 57 of 2018 requires anybody who is earning, receiving pension benefits, who was hired after July 1st, 2018, now local units need to start funding that. Well, you guys are exempt from that because your plan is closed. That's the reason they're putting so much pressure on local units to make up for lost time. It's going to be a challenge, but once everybody gets fully funded, then there's way less burden on the general fund budget to cover those costs.
While I liked Dean's scenario, that the stock market is going to do well and all that type of stuff, I don't count on that. I assume, one of the things I want to talk about when we're done is, there's more and more rumblings with regards to an economic downturn coming somewhere in our immediate future. This 10-year plus recovery that we've been going on is a long in the tooth. And there seems to be more and more warning signs out there. May or may not happen. That seems to be the tenor of the conversation. So I'm kind of anticipating that there will be some more, the economy now will not be as strong as it is. Irregardless, our pension program, our MERS pension program, the defined benefit program that we are winding down, is so much better funded than most of the communities in the state. I have the advantage of, even though this chart here only goes to 2018 that we're looking at on page 70, I already know what the numbers are because of the way MERS presents their actuarials for 2019. And based on that report, we moved up to 80%+ funded. I think it's like 82% funded.
Wow.
So, could there be an upset with regards to that if the economy tanks and the stock market crashes again or something of that nature? Yes. Might there be one before we're done with this process? Probably. I'm not too worried about it at this point. I think we're still in very, very good shape compared to the other communities. Just listening to the new mayor of Flint that's getting sworn in, and they've just come off of the emergency manager program. But they're basically saying they're looking at another bankruptcy a couple years out because of their pension debts are out there. So, we're in a great place. We're better because we keep putting money in there, and as you've seen in the budget projections, we're just kind of creeping up on that peak, and then in about, 5 years or so, then it drops off to our contributions maybe should go way down. Depending on what the economy does, that could move a couple years one way or the other. But the long-term scenario is we're winding that debt down, and it will be gone in a few years.
So why don't we go back to page...
You were on 19.
Yeah, why don't we go to page 30. How are we doing on time?
We have about an hour and 10 minutes.
Okay.
Well, about an hour. We're probably going to wrap up about 10 minutes earlier.
Okay.
To page 30?
Yes. For some reason, I was thinking we had a 6 o'clock meeting. I'm like, holy cow, I need to get through the rest of this in about 8 minutes.
No.
Don't forget, Rod, don't forget to grab some food, Joe. Help yourself.
No, Joe can't grab food until we're done. Yes, you can talk. It'll be here after your presentation, though, too.
So on page 30, we're going to look at the fund balance sheet for the city as of April 30, 2019. So This is the modified accrual basis of accounting. I would think of this as being cash basis again. So we see the general fund. There's one other fund that's deemed a major fund, that being the ambulance fund. So there's a bunch of ratios we look at in setting major funds. And all the other funds are grouped together and aggregated into one column, and they're called other governmental funds, primarily major streets, local streets, airport, marina, and a few other funds are grouped into that column. So here we see the general fund again, the unassigned fund balance, $2,030,706. And I did want to point out all of the funds of the city are presenting positive fund balances. So the ambulance funds, they have $168,000. Of restricted fund balance, and then the other governmental funds, we can't see the makeup. I will flip us to the schedule that shows the makeup of the 993,000, but they're all reporting positive fund balances. So no deficit funds to worry about. Not only is the general fund in stable condition, all the other governmental funds of the city are in stable condition as of April 30, 2019. If you turn two more pages to page 32, we get a look at the revenues and the expenditures of the city for the 12 months ended April 30, 2019. Again, modified accrual, or I would think of it as cash basis accounting. So total revenues in the general fund, first column, $6.23 million, and total expenditures came in at about $6,125,000. And then there were other transfers out for various capital projects of $281,575. That led to the decrease in fund balance of $175,640. I did want to point out not only were there transfers out of $282,000, but there was also capital outlay expenditures of about $3.5 million. So that is primarily the open space property, as well as a few other items that were expended from the general fund. Some of that was partially offset by intergovernmental revenues. They came in at $2.7 million. So there was a subsidy with regard to capital grants that the city did receive. But certainly there still is about a $700,000 difference, even with that. The investment that the city made in infrastructure and improvements within the community, there was a $175,000 decrease in fund balance. So, altogether, very much intentional with regard to that decrease in fund balance. All of the funds of the city, if you look in the very last column, had a $324,811 decrease in fund balance during the year. And if you look, the capital outlay roll was $4,111,969 across all of the funds. And really, the biggest piece of that, there was a $400,000-some-odd capital outlay expenditure in the marina fund. So some of that, again, was intentional. There were projects that came up during the year that drove down fund balance, but that's just the way that the finances are going to ebb and flow as these larger one-time capital projects come up. They're going to show an overall decrease in fund balance. But if we look at the normal, the recurring revenues and expenditures, everything was in a stable very stable during 2019. If you turn three more pages to page 35, we look at the water and sewer funds, and for the year ended April 30, 2019. So, water and sewer funds get treated a little bit differently. They're always on the accrual basis of accounting, so we've got depreciation expense factored into it. You can see that about halfway down in both the water and the sewer funds. So kind of these funds are looked at, you know, basically as a business. Is the city charging enough? You know, the question is the city charging enough to cover not only the day-to-day cost of running the water fund and the sewer system, but is there enough being charged to be able to recover future capital needs of both of those systems? And you can see that the operating income for the sewer fund was about $463,909. The water fund in the middle column was $223,501. And then the sum of those, $687,000, $410. So day-to-day cost of operating are being exceeded by the revenues generated from water and sewer funds. We do like to see that, just to make sure that those funds are going to be sustainable over a period of time. If you turn one more page to page 36, you look at the cash flows that those funds are generating. So we've got the day-to-day cost of operating the water fund and the sewer fund and the revenues being generated. But we've also got long-term debt service payments that are being made from those funds. And we've got capital improvements, capital outlay expenditures that are happening. So when we look at that, when we factor in debt service and capital improvements, we can see the net overall increase or decrease in cash and investments. In the sewer fund, in the very first column, three rows up, we can see that the sewer fund had an increase in cash during the year, $447,045 net of those debt service and capital project payments. Water fund had a small decrease, $69,057 during the year. You can see that if you look a few rows up, there was actually $281,000 of capital assets that were purchased in the water fund. That's really the primary reason that the water fund had a decrease in cash for the year. But if we look at the sewer fund and the water fund altogether, about a $378,000 increase in cash and investments during the year. So certainly a strong indication that enough is being charged to the residents to be able to make sure that we're able to provide those services and have some money set aside for future capital improvements. Page 36. Oh, sorry.
Different book.
Okay.
I'm there on that one.
So the question on that bottom line, you know, this cash equivalency is into the funds, is that the right number? In other words, are we fully confident that $1 million in the bank and the water fund and 3.7 in the sewer fund is enough to handle the our anticipated needs to maintain the system and invest in it going forward?
Yeah, that was my question too. Is there a projected ratio that we should have to justify the 3% raise that we did for services?
So my job is to look backwards. The engineer's job is to look forward. And so I would deflect a response to that. I think it is important to make sure that, you know, periodically you're checking with your engineers and understanding what are the upcoming capital needs in the water and sewer fund, and are we charging enough to make sure? Is $4.8 million enough? Well, if over the next 5 or 10 years there are capital needs of, you know, $5 million, well, it probably is enough. If there's going to be a $10 million project, maybe it isn't enough, and maybe there needs to be some exploration to figure out how are we going to finance that gap. Are we going to issue bonds? Are there capital grants available to us from various agencies? Those are important conversations to be having, just to understand what those long-term needs are going to be in those funds, and there are various ways to finance it. Ultimately, the engineers are in a way better position to understand, you know, your system is going to be good for another 10 years as is.
Sure.
But you need to think, you know, years 11 beyond about upgrading or updating the infrastructure, and here's what we think it's going to cost it to be able to do that.
So, Mike, do we have that information? Do we have that?
You will. That's part of the analysis that's being done on as part of the SAW grant as well, too. So that'll give you a lot more information on those. Mm-hmm. What is it to say? Perfect. Yeah.
And we haven't completed the contract with Somerset yet, have we?
No.
Which is another $500,000.
I'll keep trying to spend that now.
No, I'm trying to.
Oh, we still have to collect that. As a matter of fact, but Scott and I, no, Mark and I were talking about that. There's still stuff that we're due from Dan Barron and Fred Taylor that we haven't received yet. So we have to be having to take further actions with regards to that.
Page 39. won't spend necessarily a whole lot of time on this thing, but I did want to at least point it out. We've got these three, the city has three component units, discreetly presented component units, and they get broken out and set aside. We talked a little bit about the Housing Commission already. And we have the two others, the Downtown Development Authority and the Local Development Finance Authority, that don't have separately issued audit reports. So they don't have, you know, there's not a separate booklet that we can go to review the financial activities for the DDA or the LDFA. But we do get some combining statements here that show us where things stand financially for both of those component units. Downtown Development Authority, as of April 30, 2019, at $502,640 of cash and investments. The Local Development Finance Authority was sitting on $786,083 as of year end. And then if you look two rows up from the bottom, the unrestricted net position in the DDA was very similar to the cash, $486,812, and within $9 in the LDFA, $786,074. So again, cash investments are positive, unrestricted net position is positive for both of them. The Downtown Development Authority actually shares a small piece of the net pension liability just because some of those employees at one time did participate or were eligible to receive benefits. So we did attribute a small piece of that net pension liability to the Downtown Development Authority, which is why that number sits there. But any other questions about the DDA or LDFA?
So when is there a, or where is there a projected, when the tax increments
expire?
Expire, yeah, so that the revenue keeps coming in. Is that, like you said, you look backwards, but is that a tool that we have, Mike? We know?
Yes.
Okay.
They each have specific terms with regards to it. But the last time we renewed the DDA, what was it? For 15 years, was it?
2009. And we're 2024.
Yeah, it's not that far out. So we'll have to determine what we're going to do going forward in the not too distant future.
LDFA was just renewed.
Yeah, what? Yeah. A year and a half ago or so. So I was wondering, what capital asset would the DDA have?
It would primarily be infrastructure. And the reason that is picked up, I'm trying to recall. I think it's one or two projects primarily where maybe a facade grant or a sidewalk improvement type of grant. There may have been some matching dollars that the DDA kicked in for that type of a project. Or there might even been maybe some drainage, a drain project.
Was, that the
project
downtown, Park, was yes. it the downtown project
yes.
too?
Yes.
So these are just large, big ticket items that we wanted. Because of the significance of it, it didn't feel right to expense it, so we picked them up as a capital project, and we're amortizing it over the expected useful life of those projects.
And this would show from the LDFA, the new property, the property that they purchased? It purchased?
Yep.
Was that last year?
Yeah, that's what capital assets not being depreciated would be. So land doesn't get depreciated, it just goes on to the books at cost.
That was the last year, right, Mike?
Yes.
We want to turn all the way to page 60. We get into the middle of the footnote section of the audit report. Yep. So this top schedule here is a sensitivity analysis, and the intent here is to show readers what happens if the retirement assets only earn a rate of return of 8% over the next 20 years. And if that's the case, the city's going to have to pay in $1,975,000 to fully fund its net pension liability. Conversely, if those retirement assets only earn a rate of return of 7%, this is estimating the impact on what those cash outflows would change to, or what the net pension liability would increase to under those assumptions. And it increases by basically $900,000 up to $2,826,507. If the market does 1% better than expected, instead of paying in $1.975 million, it decreases $700,000 approximately to $1,245,000. $151 over the next 20 years to fully fund the pension liability. One thing I do believe is important to point out here, the MERS Retirement Board has assumed historically, or at least for the past 3 or 4 years, a long-term rate of return of 8%. They're going to drop it. It used to be 8.25%. They dropped it to 8%, I believe, 3 years ago. And in 2020, 2021, that number is going to drop to 7.35%. So we're going to see another 0.65% reduction. And that is going to, because of that change in estimate, it's going to bump up your net pension liability. You guys will be okay because of that, because you're already in very strong financial position. But it is something that's going to be coming down the pipeline. It's going to be a couple audit cycles before you guys see the impact of it. So hopefully the market keeps on performing well and the impact will be smaller than the $900,000 that it looks like it could be. But that is something that is going to change. You may or may not have received correspondence. I'm not sure what the cycle is in terms of MERS communicating that with local units, but that is going to be coming down the pipeline. They feel that 7.35% is a better representation of kind of what Mike was getting at. There's signs that the stock market might not do quite as well. The economy might be slowing down a little bit. So they're trying to be a little bit more proactive, and they're dropping that rate down to 7.35%.
Seems like for at least the last 10 years or so, every couple of years, MERS changes their actuarial assumptions. Assume people are going to live longer, rate of returns are less, things of that nature, which continually increases the contributions that they're looking for, and your reduces your pension percentage of coverage. So the next time this change happens, there'll be a bunch of chatter on my management list of risk. There is every time for those places that aren't well funded. I mean, I think there's been discussion at several of the MML board or MML conventions or conferences that a lot of communities are in, well, at least a fair number of communities are in a position where they have to get their numbers up to where they need to be. They're looking for additional sources of revenue, and they're either looking for a dedicated millage from their taxpayers just to pay historic pension costs or obligations, and I haven't quite figured out the benefit of this one, they're looking to bond for additional revenues. You know, of course, you have to have a source to pay those bonds back. But just getting into more debt to pay off a debt just doesn't seem like a very long, forward-looking plan to me.
So. Well, it does add certainty, right? Because you know what you're borrowing money at today, pay off those debts for the future.
Yeah.
The hope is that you borrow money at 4% and it earns a rate of return of 8%. The downside is you might borrow at 4%, you might put it into the trust and it earns a negative 2%, and now you're paying to lose money.
Twice, you pay twice, right?
I'm very glad we're not in that position.
The American way, just give them another credit card.
Sure.
So I was just reading something on the news feed today about, I think it was in Bloomberg or something like that, people that are taking out loans, like, let's say they're buying a $25,000 vehicle, they're taking out loans for $55,000 just to make the numbers work, which just makes no sense to me.
Just to make the numbers work?
Look at Bloomberg.
Because they still owe $30,000
yes.
in the old car.
Yes, exactly. Right.
Page 63 gives us a similar analysis on the OPEB liability for the city. The city has elected the pay-as-you-go method for the retiree health care. That's fine. It's only $134,500. We're not talking about, you know, pension where there was $8 million of liability. So basically the premiums are being paid as they come in. So what we're looking at here is we're assuming that the healthcare trend rate, the cost, or the discount rate, the cost of making those payments at 2.63% would be $134,500 if those assumptions, if the cost of providing that retiree healthcare goes up by a point. It's going to be $144,247. Conversely, if the cost decreases, it would be $126,057. We're not talking about a huge swing one way or another, because that ultimately the liability is fairly insignificant to the overall net position of the city as a whole anyway. But very similar type of analysis. You're trying to get an understanding of what market conditions can do ultimately to that net OPEB liability over the course of time.
What exactly does that cover, Cindy?
The OPEB? That's going to be the stipends that are given to the retirees on a monthly basis. They get that for 10 years. That was taken away several years ago, actually. I think that was 2014 for any new hires after in 2014. And you had to be here 20 years in order to get that, 20 or 25 years, but in order to get that benefit. So that's why our liability isn't significant. We've been funding it as we go home.
Yeah, the maximum stipend that anybody can get is $264, I think, per month for a maximum of up to 10 years. So we're not, this benefit isn't tied to changes in health insurance costs like we'll be talking about at the commission meeting tonight. It's a fixed maximum amount,
right.
And that maximum that will never change unless mm-hmm. for some reason we change it. I don't know why we would, because we'd close the program.
So originally I was going to take us to page 70 after that. I don't know if there's anything new other than, I don't know if we talked about the fund, or like they mentioned the funding percentage. So in 2017, the city was 77.8% funded. The number decreased to 77.06% in 2018. Again, entirely driven by the net investment loss. Most of our local units are showing a 2 or 3 point drop in their funding percentage levels. You guys had a little bit less of an impact, mainly because of a favorable change in actuarial assumptions. Page 72, this is a new schedule. This is the first year that the city has implemented the retiree healthcare. And as a result, we have to put in ultimately, well, 10 years worth of comparative data, just showing what direction the total OPEB liability is going over time. And here we can see it's $134,500 is the total liability. There is no net position. There have been no assets set aside to cover that. If the city wanted to, you could set up an irrevocable trust and start funding that. But there's no requirement because the plan's closed. You're not subject to Public Act 57, so you don't need to worry about funding. You can simply keep it as is and just keep budgeting for it on an annual basis and making those premium payments as they come up. Next, if you turn to page 77, I talked about we looked at the aggregate remaining fund information, and I mentioned that there are combining schedules that prove where those numbers came from. And these are those combining schedules. So these are considered non-major funds of the city. And here we see major streets, local streets, fire, Boeing, thunder, so on and so forth. I did want to point out that you can see the revenues and expenditures for each one of those funds. Major streets had a healthy increase in fund balance. Local streets basically broke even. The marina had a decrease in fund balance of $183,000. That was really the one fund that drove total fund balances down. However, it was entirely related to a $453,000 marina project, a capital outlay improvement project that happened during the course of the year. So, but for those capital improvements, there would have been an increase in fund balance for the year. Just wanted to point this out, just showing the individual makeup of what those aggregate funds were on the fund financial statements.
So, how, like with major streets, would that be that money be a project that they could done that budgeted year? The 253, or how do you create a fund balance for that?
So, every month the state of Michigan, Michigan Department of Transportation provides an Act 51 payment.
Right, right.
And they simply accumulate over the course of time. Now, there's also a dedicated millage for major streets that factor into it as well, a little bit of some miscellaneous charges in there as well. But those resources are restricted. So they go into major streets, they go into local streets, they can be used, any surplus can be used on future projects. The one thing to keep in mind is that it is important to have fund balance in major and local streets because as of April 30, you're just getting into the midst of your busy right. construction right. season. So normally we do see major and local streets with a healthy fund balance at the end of the year, and then it gets spent down just because of the timing of the calendar.
And we had put some projects off from last
yeah,
fall.
Yeah, yeah, right.
Weather and then
the
we
Cedar Street or whatever.
Correct. Yes.
Was it Cedar? Yeah.
Front Street, there was some Front Street work that needed to be done. And then couldn't do much in April because April wasn't real cooperative.
Yeah, and this suffers from being in the middle of when.
Right.
But normally, I mean, it would be spent down to zero.
It would be
spent right?
close.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like at the end of this budget, you were projecting to leave in major streets a fund balance of just under $24,000.
Yeah.
For the last couple of years, it's been well over $150,000. And we just usually adjust that by lowering the contribution that we make from the general fund into either major or local streets, depending on where we've got the project going. Usually that year.
Next, if you turn to page 92. '92 gets us into the statistical section of the audit report, and as I mentioned early on, 3.7% of local units have this type of data in their audit report. The other 96% don't, and so entirely optional. But this is, I think, very useful information to have. I think it tells an important story about how the financial condition is improving or deteriorating over the course of time. The one thing I did want to point out on page 92 is if you look at the 2016 count, so four columns over.
With the asterisk?
Yes. And the asterisk means 2016. We're pointing out the fact that that was the first year that the pension reporting standard was put into effect. That was the one that really had a big impact on the financial position of Boeing. Compared to, if we look at 2015, the unrestricted net position, three rows down, was $4.8 million. And then in 2016, it flips and goes all the way to a deficit of $7.2 million. 2016, it improved to a deficit of $2.66 million. 2018 was the first year subsequent to that new reporting standard of a positive unrestricted net position of $625,000. And then 2019, it bumped up another $300,000 to $990,000. $727. So you can see a really favorable increase in the unrestricted net position over the course of time. Again, active, prudent financial management. Most of our county and local units are showing, you know, a less gradual improvement. Most of them, if they had a deficit unrestricted net position, are still reporting that deficit unrestricted net position. So you guys have already corrected, or not corrected that, but recovered from it. Same with the primary government. So the second row up from the bottom, we see the same trend. In 2015, it was $7.22 million of positive unrestricted net position. So that's including governmental funds and business type water and sewer. It dropped all the way from $7.2 million favorable to $4.37 million unfavorable. And then you can see the recovery in each of the subsequent 3 years. So 2017, a slight positive unrestricted net position of $800,000, then $4.7 million, then $5.7 million. So again, just a continuation of a very favorable trend.
Mm-hmm. This is different than the unrestricted funds in the general fund, right?
Yes.
So it's not like in 2016 we didn't have any money to spend.
Correct.
Just taking into account capital assets and all that. It's just on paper. You want to be positive.
Sure.
But it just doesn't have an effect on local government spending necessarily. Right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, Joe, are you saying that swing from 15 to 16 is a result of the pension liability showing up?
Mm-hmm.
that everything, so the there's that's a difference of $11 million.
There are other moving parts and pieces to it as well, various capital projects. You can see that there were changes in the net investment in capital assets. So the timing of the receipt of bonds, the payments of bonds, the beginning and completion of capital projects, a lot of things factor into it. But altogether, to have brought the unrestricted net position up to a positive balance that quickly, and maybe as importantly, the total net position in 2015 was $24 million. In 2019, it went to $29.9 million. So not only is it unrestricted, and there are other moving parts and pieces to that unrestricted line, but the total primary government, the total net position is trending up as well. So overall, we're seeing healthy increases.
I'm glad you understand it.
Sure. Yeah. Page 95. Maybe this will address the question. So we see a deficit, unrestricted net position. And the question was, well, you know, did it mean that we didn't have funds to spend? This is focusing on the unassigned fund balance for the general fund, which is excluding any long-term liabilities, capital assets. We're looking just at immediate fund balance, immediate resources. And so the top section is focusing on the general fund. 2018 compared to 2019, you can see a small decrease, but still very stable, 31.7%, very, very healthy unassigned fund balance. And you can see the increases and decreases over time. Of the general fund unassigned fund balance, it's staying right basically in that $2 million to $2.2 million ballpark over the course of time. So just wanted to point that out in terms of comparative unassigned fund balance over the past 10 years. And
Joe, could I just say, was 2015 when the DPW building was built? Is that when that drop is there? Right here, 3.1 is what I was referring to. That's why I'm
so
easy to do.
That's all that I've got. I'm happy to answer any other questions.
Specifically, the ambulance fund. I was curious on that. I don't know where it is.
There's a comment in the air. The ambulance fund had a $73,000 decrease in fund balance this year because of a decrease in revenue relative to costs.
Yeah, I'm not too worried about that. A lot of that, you said, we're working our way through our finances, our arrangements with Boyne Valley Township. Each group kind of just held their money in their own pockets until this whole issue settled down. So this last year was kind of a weird year. It seems like we're moving towards resolutions on that. I never want to guarantee anything there, but I think that'll improve the situation.
So is it a structural problem with, is it
no.
just that situation or is it a structural problem?
I don't think there's a structural problem. At least at this point, I don't think there is.
But generally speaking, that account is at a loss every year, isn't it?
We make a contribution from the general fund.
Correct.
Right. We all share.
EMS operations, much like police or fire, are not profit producing entities.
We share that loss. With
yes, we spread it.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So that's the advantage of the system we've got currently. So I would think this year might be more of an outlier year. Once things get stabilized, we'll get a truer picture as to whether there is some type of a structural issue. I don't believe there is at this point.
Mm-hmm.
get into that a lot more, I think, with the budget coming up as well, too. Hopefully all these issues will be resolved. Cindy's had some good meetings with the township where they're talking the right stuff, but whether they're actually carrying it out, I don't know.
Well, Joe, you know, this is the third time through it, I think. First time was right after election, wasn't it? And I'm no more an expert than I was at the beginning of it, but I, you know, this year I felt like I wasn't. Each year I feel like I'm less lost. And I get this thing the first time, and I just got to remember, what did Joe tell us last year? And it gets easier to comprehend. And the more you understand, the more interesting it is. To see how, in God, it's a fairly complete picture of our finances.
I find it interesting because a $500 million per year corporation gets audited and they have a 10-page report at the end of it. You know, a local unit of government gets audited and they have 130 pages. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of information in here, and it's hard to know what's important and what's just there because it needs to be there.
Yeah, I think I've asked this question in past years. I know I have. Is there a way that we could, or other communities, just been able to have like a front and back little colorful summary? Here's what our audit.
This an is info a, sheet.
An info sheet. Takeaways. A little infographic. This is the financial position of our city based on the audit. Without, you know, having somebody says, well, what, you know, just look online. It's all there. This doesn't help very much unless you have Joe.
We have a dashboard or something?
We have a dashboard.
Just a dashboard sort of thing that
we actually, we do have the dashboard. The state provides, they'll take this and they'll summarize it into the dashboard. So, actually, Barb and I have been talking about that because it's time to get that ready. We have to have that updated coming up very soon.
So where would people find that on our webpage? It's there.
Well,
I think it's on the home page.
Yes.
Right.
A click to it?
Yeah. Well, I haven't looked at
it'll
it.
It'll link you to the state.
It seems like you see a thing with a pipe.
I don't think it's on the home. Well, I don't think the whole thing is on the home page.
No, but there's a column that I think will take you somewhere.
Yeah.
So right at there, right, is that on the home page? Well, actually, I think if I go home.
Is it another?
Right here, under performance, community performance and financial status. So you click on that.
Can you turn the screen a little bit more?
Yeah, so you click on that, and then it has all the information that the citizen's guide, and it'll direct you to the state website. That'll kind of give you kind of a snapshot of it. Mm-hmm. And then we have also the performance. It summarizes the budget, summarizes possibly what we think it's going to be next year, and we just add a 2 or 3% unless we know it's a large project. So, yes, that is the easiest way to direct somebody something mm-hmm. easy. I know what you're talking about. You're talking about something for all of you. But that'll
do. No, not for us. I mean, we have this. You know, but that, you know, somebody's, if we have this audit, it's a great product. But
yeah, most people aren't going to wait. They're not going to wait to see that.
No.
Here's a picture of our finances. We're in great financial shape for these reasons. We have this much money. When you look at everything we have, this is our position of our community. When you look at the money we have to spend, this is what we have, and this is what, you know, and just some some simple statements that 83% of our
pension
liability is funded. We're in much better shape than many other
according to Joe.
No, that isn't according to Joe. He's just reporting that. Yeah. Right.
No, but just some very simple things that say that somebody could look over and say, oh, yeah, I guess, you know.
I'm trying to remember. It seems like on the state's dashboard, they had some like 5 or 6 indicators where they had like arrows up if you're doing better.
It says right here.
Arrows down.
We direct you right to our dashboard that I update every year through BSNA, which is another reason that BSNA is the best software ever out there for us, because all we have to do is go in and they created this several years ago when Governor Snyder put this into place. They created this, and all we have to do is just update annually our information. And you just anything as far as fund balance, you show all that just to see what you've done, your economic strength, your quality of life, just all kinds of good information is right in there that just you can click right on it. love this. This is a fun one.
People probably don't know it's there.
Yeah, that's it.
They go to our website. I mean,
and that might be something we could extenuate, especially like when we're doing the audit reports. Maybe have one of those flash things say, "Hey,
look here
for the financial return," or something like that, or have a couple key talking points that you know.
Just key talking points.
But somehow to get them out there to share people is what we're doing all that as well.
And it shows also. You can click on. And we have a link to our debt summaries. You can see where all of our debts are and our debt schedules. I mean, it puts it all out there for people.
Other questions or comments for Joe?
Well, that just reminded me about we still have a construction fund balance of something, don't we?
Yeah, about $200,000.
$244,000.
Do we have to spend that in a certain...
No. I mean, there's a couple things. We're still not quite closed out with the contractor yet. We've had performance issues with the heating and cooling system that probably are the most problematic in the building, and that may have some expense to it. So I'm kind of just keen on that stuff until, again, 3 years in, I would have liked to think that we would have been settled on all this stuff a while ago. As you were here last week voting, you may have noticed that the contractor was back in taking care of some more warranty items with the painting and sanding and all that type of stuff. So
I just wonder, at what point do they say that's a maintenance issue rather than a construction issue?
Oh, we have a punch list.
We've identified all sorts of things well before our two-year warranties were up to say, okay, we're after that. And Hallmark and Ray keep saying, "Oh, well, these guys are good for their word." So
we're not letting out.
No, I'm just from a legal point of view, when it's the construction fund closed and it's no longer that, it's maintenance or whatever issue.
Yeah. So could you keep that for 20 years?
Yeah.
Yes, I don't anticipate that we will.
But you
but
can.
No,
you can.
There's
no.
No, there's no legal thing. Out there, and I've talked to a couple years ago, I had a lot of discussions with McGow, thank you, with regards to what we could do. It could we use that money to pay down the debt or things? And he said, no, and how all these parameters on what we can do with it. We're in good shape. We have to use it for exactly what was specified in the ballot issue that we're looking for the proposal to the public. So we can use it for furnishings and equipment related to the building and things of that nature. But I want to make sure the building is completely sound before we part with that money. So. If you don't have any questions for Joe, I just want to make a couple observations if I could.
Okay.
I want you to exhaust yourselves first before I check. And you can audit my statements and tell them if I'm fibbing or anything like that. I mean, overall, I think, again, the audit report that we've got continues to show that the city is in either good or excellent financial shape. So that's one of my top priorities because I think that gives us the most flexibility. I was real proud back in 2008. Someone used this the term weathering the storm, and I had that written down before. I think you said it. We were able to weather the storm without going through any of that type of stuff. And maybe I'm just a Michigan State fan where the glass is always half empty, but I am concerned about weathering that next storm, and I think that storm is getting closer. So
what do you base that on, Mike?
Experience.
Okay.
Michigan's just economic cycles, what I'm hearing out in the media and the press, that we've had this for 10 years. I mean, history repeats itself, and those that forget what history does, they have consequences, and it seems like this happens every few years, especially in Michigan.
Especially when they overproduce vehicles and got 2 million vehicles out there that haven't been sold, from the 2008 models, or not 98, but 2018.
So
another factor there too is our expenses. We've talked about this before. Are increasing faster than our property tax revenue and other revenues are increasing. So that seems like that's a long-term structural
issue.
Issue,
yes.
Not related to the variability of the economy.
Correct. And currently we're able to grow our way out of it, right. Or at least hold the trends. That won't always be the case. That won't always be the case. So, I mean, Hewitt's...
Well, you know, I read a lot, and, you know, I don't necessarily see that being expressed like that.
Yeah.
You know, technology's had a lot, you know, I know looking back, you don't want to make mistakes or anything, but technology, just how the economy has changed, you know, all those sorts of things, it's just a little bit different, and people are still optimistic, you know, so...
CEO of J.P. Morgan was on 60
Minutes.
Yeah,
right, Jamie Dimon.
He was very optimistic.
Well, it's with 2 million unsold vehicles and overcapacity, you know, it's sitting there, and it's the auto industry has taken us down before. So
I think
Mike's right on, you know, as far as it's...
Time will tell.
Yeah, right.
I mean, if we could pull our resources and our knowledge and come up with an analysis that, you know, we could sell... We make a fortune on that. We can, you know. I just look at my 35 years plus experience in local government, and I just want to make sure that we're on the safe side of any of that stuff. So that if, you know, and I hope I'm wrong and you're right, that the economy is better than I'm anticipating or things of that nature. But I just want to be prepared for that worst case scenario.
And I'm hearing more of what you're hearing. But I'm always going to be on the conservative side, no matter what. I'm always
I am
always
too.
Going to be my mom.
I mean, you have to be like that. It's just
it's prudent in the government.
Yeah,
so
right. Exactly.
In 1990 or 91, there the savings and loan and the banking took us down. You know, for
tech has taken us down.
Same thing again. You know,
Well, e-commerce took us down.
Well, then you look at Amicon; they were overly. I believe we were overly optimistic about what the future would be, right. and took on probably more debt than they can now sustain.
So irregardless of what the forecast is, I mean, I'm just, you know, as you know, I'm somewhat fiscally conservative with regards to that, and I'm guarded for an economic downturn. One of the things that we know that we're going to have, that it looks like we're going to have an upturn on, is the lake. And I keep pointing to that and say that could scramble our budget real big, real quick.
Yes.
And $2 million or anything that we've got in the bank to work with could disappear like that if we're all of a sudden sandbagging or things of that nature. So that's a little bit out of our control. That's on my worry list as well, too.
What are you hearing on the MML side? I mean, what's the state, where's their position?
With regards to?
The rising waters.
I haven't heard anything with regards to any action.
Emergency funds, are they in the back of their minds saying, okay, we...
They can't even approve a budget.
Yeah, so sure.
I don't think they're that forward. At least they haven't projected anything that I've heard from the league as well, too. I remember, you know, it wasn't that long ago that we were out looking for emergency dredging funds to keep our marina open. I think there's going to be lots of communities that are dealing with that. So, unfortunately, I don't think the state has the resources. Much of the resources that they used to have as well, too. So overall, I think we're still in good shape. We all know that we've got lots of things on our wish list, whether it's a marina or whether it's trails and things of that nature. We could spend this money in a heartbeat with regards to it. So that's another one of my cautionary tales as well, too. I don't want to think that, you know, we're in perfect shape or everything. I just want to make sure we stay vigilant with regards to that. And I guess the other thing, and you'll notice it in my manager's commission update to you, this is the last year we're going to have Joe reporting on fiscal year's audit that had our current fiscal team completely in place. Shelley has announced her retirement as well, too. She and Cindy are obviously, you know, the key drivers with regards to this document and a lot of our performance as well, too. So we're going to have some transitions there as well. So just a couple observations.
That was a big one. That is a big one. So
did you know the date?
Yes.
March.
It's in March 12th.
March 12th. Mm-hmm.
That's a Thursday.
Yeah.
Another party to plan, right?
We're going to have a party. We're going to have a good one. So, you know, and if you look back, even though we've been conservative all these years, look what's been accomplished. So being conservative, we can still accomplish a lot of good things out there. I'm not worried that good things still won't happen. I mean, look, just for one example, a short time ago, look what happened with the trail. You know, the trail costs came in so much higher, and boom, we're in pretty good shape. You know, it didn't take much for some people to pull this together, so I think we're going to be fine.
Well, thank you, Joe. I appreciate it.
Sure.
And I started packing up the food, and you need to eat it and eat.
I kind of
unpacked it. So.
Yeah, we'll be a little short on salad, it looks like. So
keep
on having a little bit.
I don't know what happened. It's good. It's very good. So we'll be eating salad here tomorrow.
So you got about 17 minutes until the meeting starts.
So
I'll make a motion to adjourn.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? All right. Joe, you can have dinner.